This is Graz from the Netflix show Making Fun, and you are listening to Fascination Street podcast.
I believe that everybody has a story, and I'm fascinated to hear them. So come with me as we take a walk down Fascination Street.
Welcome back, Streetwalkers. This episode is with Zach Schreier. Zach is what we call a serial entrepreneur. When he was in middle school, he started a business with his best friend, Nick Hamburger. When he was in high school, he started a business with his best friend, Nick Hamburger. And when he was in college, he started a business with his best friend, Nick Hamburger. I keep saying Nick Hamburger because that's the coolest name I've ever heard in my life. Zach and Nick founded the company Cuevos, which is a snack chip made out of egg whites. We talk all about his entrepreneurial mindset, some of his other products that he started. We talk a lot about Cuevos and why he did it, what's in it, and what he hopes to gain out of it. We talk about his experience on Shark Tank and who partnered up with them for Cuevos. Towards the end, we talk about his other company, Lifestacks, which is a nutraceutical company, which is entering the market with a well-balanced and stacked MCT product. He tells us where we can get both of these products, and his MCT product actually has a try before you buy program going on right now, and you can check that out at the website, which he gives in the episode. And this is my conversation with co-founder of Cuevos and co-founder of Lifestacks, Zach Schreier. You talk to me, yeah. Welcome to Fascination Street Podcast, Zach Schreier. How are you doing today, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
It is 100% my pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, streetwalkers, if you will, Zach is what we like to call in the business a serial entrepreneur. How old are you, Zach?
I'm 24.
We never, ever talk about age, but I only ask that because you're 24. You've already one, two, three. I can't even count how many businesses you've started already. What I like to do, Zach, is I like to find out where people started, where they came from, where they grew up. It kind of helps us understand how they got to where they are. So if you don't mind, where were you born and raised, man? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I was born in Chicago, and then pretty quickly, my parents moved us out to the northern suburbs. So we're here in Glencoe now. Was raised here my whole life, never moved.
School and everything was in Glencoe?
School and everything was in Glencoe, or like a surrounding suburb, a sort of township school that many of the local suburbs attend. And then went to college out in Massachusetts.
Why did you go to college in Massachusetts?
I really loved the setting. So it was like in the mountains and a pretty small population and rural and just a really pleasant place to be. It reminded me of summer camp. And that was my favorite thing growing up. I also did it to join the running team. It was a small team, competitive, but D3. And so that was an attractor for me. I definitely would not have made it on a D1 team or even been invited to practice. So that was important.
So when you say running, you mean track, right? Like that?
Cross country for me, yeah.
Got you. All right, rad. Okay, so before you got to college, you did all of the other school things like we all do, except that for some reason, your high school experience was just a tad bit different in that you decided to start a business, kind of. Tell me about that. What were you selling? And please make it something legal in high school.
Yes, definitely selling only legal things in high school and still to this day, I'll say. In high school, really got my start in entrepreneurship, thinking about an equity crowdfunding business.
What the hell is that?
You know, it was too complicated for a bunch of high school kids to handle, so it didn't really go anywhere. But basically, we were interested in the idea of allowing regular folks to invest small amounts of money in private companies and own equity in exchange. So sort of like the Kickstarter model, but instead of, you know, getting a gift or a product from the company that you're investing in, you're actually making a genuine investment, and then you get all the things that come along with equity. And that was made possible by some legislation that passed a few years prior that basically created some exemptions so that you didn't have to be like a millionaire to invest in private companies.
Okay, so you're talking about you wanted to set up sort of a thing where just the regular schmo can have his $500, $600, $700 and they can invest in a company that's kind of like the stock market, but for private companies?
Exactly, yep.
What kind of nerd was paying attention to legislation during high school at that, like, what is wrong with you, man?
No, I wasn't actually paying attention to the legislation. It just worked out that for the maybe year that we thought this was feasible, the legislation was on our side, because I think it was the Jobs Act, maybe the 2010 Jobs Act, that made that possible. But it was just convenient timing. In high school, that was also when I started acting on the idea for Quavos, which are chips made from egg whites, which I think is probably the more important story for your audience here.
It's one of them. We're not going to go to Quavos just yet. I still want to touch on high school. Mm-hmm. So you came up with this, you and I'm assuming some friends came up with this idea, equity, private company, blah, blah, blah. Were there companies that you had in mind, or was this just a general platform that you guys were thinking of?
We're thinking of a platform.
Okay. Because now, and I think it's, you know, fairly new, there's a platform where people, everyday Joe Schmoes like you and me, can invest their $500-$700 into like a Monet or something like that. Like, you'll own just this tiny little piece of a Monet, and whenever somebody sells it, you'll get whatever, you know, whatever your percentage is. So is it kind of like that, but with actual businesses?
Yeah, that was the idea. And there are actually platforms now that do this.
Does it make you mad?
No, not at all. People like to say that ideas are cheap and execution is where, you know, the value is created. I actually, I heard somebody else say this recently, but it's always been in my head also. I think the right ideas are not cheap. The right ideas are definitely very situational, and you have to have a context that puts you in the mindset to think of a solution that people haven't thought of before. I think idea is part of it, but execution is definitely a big part too. So I don't mind that somebody else moved with it. I mean, we weren't going to, so.
No, rad. Also, while you were in high school, you were selling other things. Again, not drugs. If I understand correctly, you were selling some sort of a Japanese soda. Or what were you selling?
Yeah, that was middle school, actually.
Oh my gosh, middle school.
Yeah, we realized there was some demand for these Ramune sodas. They're the ones where they have that marble that's kind of keeping the seal. And then you use like some sort of pusher to drop that marble down, and then it opens up. So there's a novelty to it. And so they were way overpriced, and we took advantage of that. And we would bring a six pack or two to the cafeteria each day and distribute them under the table, literally.
So when you say they were way overpriced, do you mean like at school they were way overpriced?
The sort of retail price was also pretty high. Like, it was like $3 a pop, but you could go and buy wholesale for like $1.10. And so we would do that and then mark them up.
At this time, were you friends with Nick Hamburger?
Yes, he was my co-founder on the business. Yeah,
he was part of that?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, Nick Hamburger, which I'm aware that there is such thing as food porn, which is where people, and that's what I do right before I go to sleep. I just scroll through Instagram watching food, watching hamburgers be made, watching pizzas, like whatever. I just like watching food. It just intrigues the shit out of me. And so that's food porn. Nick Hamburger is the coolest food porn name I've ever heard of. So when you see him, he'll listen. Nick, that's the coolest name. That's your food porn name. And I love it. Nick Hamburger. Oh my God, that's amazing. Now, I know you guys got shut down. You weren't allowed to sell this. You weren't allowed to be slinging these Japanese sodas. Is it because you were in direct competition with the school, or because you just weren't allowed to sell stuff?
Yeah, they had a policy that you weren't allowed to sell things on campus.
How long did you guys get away with it?
It was probably a few months. My dad was our advisor on that business. And he said, you know, keep it slow, you know, let the demand build. Don't bring too many sodas to school each day. You're going to get caught and, you know, the novelty will go away.
Your dad knew it was against the rules.
Yeah, he did. But, you know, I think his advice was really good. And we took it for like a month and then got greedy and started bringing too much. And we got caught pretty soon.
So do you think that's why you got caught, is because you didn't follow your dad's advice?
Yeah, I think it would have helped. We would have at least gotten a few more months out of it if we had.
What did your dad do? What does your dad do?
My dad was trained as a lawyer, and he practiced law for 10 years. And then my mother's father actually started the floor covering business here in Chicago. And both my parents actually went into that business together a decade after my dad started practicing law. So he sort of transitioned his career over to that.
What was his role in floor covering business?
Nothing at all, but they actually
just invested.
Actually, I think they got a loan from my grandfather to buy it from him because he was ready to retire and they were ready to do this.
Okay, so his role is owner.
Owner, yep, exactly. He and my mom are 50-50 partners in that.
Oh, okay. I was trying to figure out how he would go from being a lawyer to, you know, being a salesman selling tile. But okay, cool. That makes more sense. Okay, so you go to school, and what was the plan? What were you going to school for?
It's a liberal arts school. And so, you know, I didn't have to say in advance what I was going to do, but in my mind, it was going to be economics and poli sci. But then I was always sort of a philosophical person. But basically, as an 18-year-old, I thought I knew all the philosophy that I needed. And
what?
Yeah, I know. It was crazy. I thought I knew everything. So I was not planning on taking philosophy courses at Williams for that reason. But then I did. And I loved the first course I took. And that became my major alongside econ.
So philosophy and economics. Okay. Where's Nick during while you went to school? Where did Nick go?
University of Chicago.
Okay. So he's in Chicago. You're in Boston, Baston. And I'm assuming you come home for all the breaks and whatever. And you and Nick hang out and make hamburgers. Just kidding. You don't make hamburgers. You make omelets.
That's right. We do.
That's not weird, but go ahead.
Yeah.
First of all, okay, so I'm going to interrupt you a lot.
Yeah, no worries.
You have type 1 diabetes, right?
That's right.
That's something you were born with, right?
Born predisposed to it, but I was actually diagnosed when I was 11.
Type 1 is the kind that's not your fault?
Yes, right, exactly.
Okay. I know it's a rude way to say it, but type 2 is definitely you can get it later in life, mm-hmm. depending on how you treat your body, right?
That's right.
Type 1 is not that way. There's nothing you can do about it. It's just, it is.
Yeah, it is. The thing that's variable is the onset. It's like some sort of virus triggers the onset of the immune system attacking the pancreas. And so you're always at risk of getting it when you're genetically predisposed. But the actual timing is variable. Some people get it as late as 40. Well, one thing that's notable is that it looks like kids are getting it earlier and earlier now. So that's suggestive of lifestyle factors that cause the onset to happen sooner.
Got you. So because you were diagnosed, I guess, with type 1 diabetes, that sort of put it in your head to think about what you're putting in your body, right?
Exactly.
Before you got diagnosed, did you give two shits about what you were putting in your body?
Not at all. I was a fiend for sugar. Still am, but especially before I was diagnosed.
All right, cool. That's what got you selling those Japanese sodas, right?
Yep.
Okay, so at some point you're like, you know what? I would love to eat Cool Ranch Doritos like all the other cool kids, but instead, I'm going to make myself an omelet. Talk me through that. What the hell is that?
Yeah. So, you know, eggs are great for type ones because they're just, they're a low carb food or no carb food really. And so they don't cause a sugar spike. You don't have to worry about them. The nurses said, basically, if you're hungry at night, best to just have some eggs instead of, you know, have some carbs and have to worry about the spike and then the dip overnight. So that was my go-to for years. And I was always pretty experimental. Like I just liked doing like tinkering with things, not like mechanical, but more like in the kitchen, I would play around. I realized, I don't know exactly when, but maybe sometime during middle school that you could get these like crispy flakes that were effectively low carb chips. And so I remember like, I've got a picture from when I was pretty young.
How? You say, I realized this. Not, how does that manufacture? Like, how did that happen?
If you use like a pan that's not a non-stick pan, you'll notice like the outsides get coated with like that thin layer of like crisped egg or egg white. I love that stuff. And I would like sort of flake it off onto my plate after I made the omelet. You know, I was like, okay, these are crunchy little bits.
So you're talking about like the bits that stick to the pan, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool.
So I always had that in mind as a sort of like a snack, a diabetic snack, but it didn't act on it.
But there's not a whole lot. It's crumbs. I mean, it's like it couldn't even fit on a spoon. It's not that much.
Yeah, that's fair. I think at one point I also played around with like taking just the tiniest bit of egg white and making a little strip and kind of cooking that pretty hard. And then, you know, you can get a pretty crispy, like some, you know, not infinitely small bit of egg white that's crunchy.
So this was a result of you playing around and messing with different things and experimenting with different ways to cook an egg. Why egg whites? Is that just the what crisps up the best? Or do you have an aversion to the fat that's in the yellow?
Yeah, no, actually no aversion at all. It is just for the textural reasons. Initially, this was egg chips. I made full eggs. But then we discovered pretty early on that we would not be able to get the texture we were looking for with yolks. It was just too soft. It couldn't really cook into a chip.
Okay. And so at what point in your illustrious friendship, did you say, hey, Nick Hamburger? Because you would obviously use his full name every time you talk to him. I would. You said, hey, Nick Hamburger, do you want some of the stuck-on bits from my eggs? Like, how did you get him hooked? How did you get him involved in this, roped in?
Yeah, right. Roped in for sure. It was right after high school. That summer, I was just coaching some kids and running, and I had a good amount of free time. So there's a lot of hanging out. And I think, you know, probably one Wednesday afternoon, I called him up and said, hey, I'm going to make some of those egg chips again if you want to come over and play around with me. We just had a fun afternoon kind of like trying to get the texture right on the egg chips. It didn't really get anywhere, of course, but I think we played around for a few weeks that summer. And so it was sort of like a latent idea that we maybe could make this into a business, maybe after we graduated college, we were thinking.
But that's not what happened. You didn't wait till after you graduated college. In fact, I don't know if Nick did graduate yet, did he?
He has not. No, he's done.
He has not. Do you know why he hasn't, Streetwalkers? I'll tell you why. No, I won't. Zach will. Why didn't your friend Nick Hamburger graduate from Hamburglar University?
During his sophomore year of college, also mine, he took the idea to an undergraduate incubator. They've got like a really great business ecosystem at UChicago. And so he applied, he got accepted, he pitched, he won the pitch contest, and then we got a 15K check to kind of kick things off.
15, 1-5? 1-5,
yeah.
Okay.
And then shortly thereafter, he applied to an accelerator with Kraft Heinz. It was the first year they were putting this on, and they were looking for emerging food brands. You know, we were a candidate and we were accepted that also. And that came with a 50K investment from Kraft. Basically, we just, you know, we had what we needed to kind of like start. Nick had already built some momentum for the company and we decided to take 1 year off of school at that point. So instead of going back for junior year, we're going to take a gap year.
Now, at the beginning of that, you were saying he, and then right in the middle, you changed to we. Mm-hmm. So he decided to work with some incubator whatnots. And obviously, he was like, hey, Zach. And you were like, hey, Nick Hamburger. And he was like, there's this incubator thing. And is it okay? What do you think? Can we do the egg chips? Or did he sneak around and do it all behind your back like a dirty scoundrel?
Not at all. He suggested that we would apply. I think I did the application with him, although my guess is that he did more of it. Then he brought a few friends on board and I would talk to them periodically. I got updates about what was happening in the incubator, but I wasn't the one participating in the incubator because it was local in Chicago. And then, you know, starting in April or so of that year, there was enough momentum with the check from UChicago and then the acceptance to Kraft Heinz that we decided we would spend some time off of school doing it. So that's sort of where it became my day-to-day also.
So you said he brought a couple of people on. Was it two people? Mm-hmm. So far in the story, there was four people involved at this time?
Yeah, that's right.
Did all four of you decide to take a gap year, or was it just you and Nick Hamburger?
So just Nick and I decided to take a gap year. They were willing to dedicate a lot of time during school to it, but at that point, it didn't seem like a reasonable choice for their sort of long-term trajectory. But Nick and I, you know, both of us were eager to do this. We've been thinking about starting a business together for a long time.
Since middle school.
Right, exactly. People often ask, like, are your parents okay with you taking time off school? And the answer was actually they're thrilled because we're, you know, going out there doing this. And it's a pretty low risk thing to do. You know, it's like graduate at 22 or 23, whatever.
School's not going anywhere.
Right, exactly.
You can always go back to school.
Totally.
You have to strike while the quavos are hot.
Spot on. We should use that as a tagline.
You shouldn't because it's corny as shit.
So my dad's one condition for me taking time off school was that we had a plan. So he said, as long as you've got a business plan, you're not just going to be sitting around waiting for something to happen, then you can do it.
Did he help you with that business plan, or was that part of the programs at Chicago helped you with the business plan?
Yeah, they gave us a sense of how an early stage business like this would unfold. And so that was kind of in our minds. And then really, you know, from there, the structure really came from what needed to happen. We needed to actually create the product and scale it. We needed to raise money. We needed to develop a brand, a website. We needed initial sales. We needed some retail presence. And so all of those things became sort of our day-to-day job.
Okay. So I'm just going to assume that at this point, it's not your focus so far in life. And you have no idea, like, where would I even get? Does your product come in bags, like chip bags?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Where do you even get chip bags? Like, I would imagine you're starting from ground zero. Is all of this information readily available, or did you have to like know somebody? I know that Nick Hamburger's neighbor is like the co-founder of Skinny Pop or whatever. So is there some, hey, where would I even get bags? Like that kind of thing. Is it networking? Is it there a class you can take that tells you where to get all this stuff? Like I'm 150 years old. I could not tell you where I could go to get bags with my name on it.
Right, right. Andy Friedman from Skinny Pop was definitely helpful, and he alerted us to a few things that we would need. The first thing that really came up with him was shelf life. So we came to him with some, like, you know, half wet little flakes of egg white, and he's like, you know, guys, it's not going to keep in a bag. You need to figure out how to dry this out. So the moisture content has to be something like 5% or less, and then you need to do microbial testing to make sure there's nothing growing on it, basically. So, you know, he gave some pointers there. He must have also told us kind of how everything worked with packaging. So with most snack products, the inside of the bag is flush with nitrogen because the oil that coats the chip to get the seasoning to stick will oxidize and become just like less tasty if it's exposed to oxygen for too long. So that's why, you know, after you open the bag of chips, you can't keep it for months. But when it's closed, you can, because on the inside is nitrogen instead of oxygen. And that, you know, keeps the shelf life.
So whenever I get a, let's just say I get a bag of tortilla chips, and of course it's always just half full, stupid, but all of that other room, that air, so to speak, is not air, it's nitrogen.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, okay, rad. Did not know that.
Neither do we, but he told us some things like that. Also, you know, Nick was really good at getting advice from other entrepreneurs. And so he would think of anybody that he knew and anybody that they knew that might be able to tell us about X, Y, and Z. Myself, like, I'm generally a minimum effective dose sort of person, where as little as I can do to get the result I'm looking for is what I do. And, you know, that has evolved over time. But certainly at that point in my life, I was that way. And Nick really wanted to be like 110% certain, make sure that we had the answers from two different people at least, so that we were sure that we were doing the right thing. And so he was the one who really learned about all these different inputs that go into like actually shipping a finished snack product.
So you're like, hey, how do I get it in this bag? And he's like, hey, why do we have to have this style of bag? Why does it have to be nitrogen? What, like, so you're just like, how do I get this done? And he's like, why do we do it this way?
Yeah, I guess not so much like questioning the fundamentals of what we're doing, but more just like hearing from dozens of people on each topic so that he's got really broad exposure to what people do in the space. That was super helpful.
Well put, well put. You're just a kid on the running team who wants to study philosophy and economics. What makes you think you can start a business? What makes you think you can come up with a new product? What makes you think anybody else would give a shit about your egg crumbs? I didn't mean it to sound disrespectful. I apologize.
No problem. No. I mentioned this the other day also. I know he's controversial at this point, but I just heard somebody ask Elon Musk in a Q&A, how would you encourage entrepreneurs to start businesses? And he said, if you need encouragement, you should not start a business. I think that's pretty fair. Like, not that you shouldn't start a business, but it really has to come from within. It also has to come from a sense of market fit. So it's not a good thing to do, basically, unless you've got the persistence and there's actually something that you're pursuing that's really meaningful. And so in this case, actually, it was really the fact that the ball was already rolling and the costs of moving forward was so low. You know, if I had a family or this is something I was starting up alone, I'm not sure I would have had sort of the go-getter attitude at that point in my life to do this. But, you know, Nick got the ball rolling with his incubator and we had some funding and people were also encouraging us along the way because of how appropriate the product was for the time. So there was a big like keto craze. People were interested in these simple ingredients or few ingredient labels. People love egg whites. So all that together was like, people were like, oh, you've got it. Like, this is the thing and you just have to run with it. So we did have some encouragement.
Well, I am also glad that you did. At what point in this process did you guys decide that you needed to move into a commercial kitchen situation? Because I would imagine that a lot of this trial and error was, you know, in your kitchen at your house. And at a certain point, you got to move to a commercial space. At what point did that make itself known? And whose decision was it?
I guess probably the end of 2018, we started leasing this space. And that was when we were ready to start producing at scale. Before that, it was sort of like we were bringing equipment into the home kitchen and kind of making a do-it-yourself assembly line. There's legislation that requires new brands to move to certified facilities within 90 days of starting to produce their product. So we had a little bit of grace period where we could sell stuff that we were doing at home. You know, after that, we had to find a way to do it, you know, properly.
You're really into this legislation thing.
Only the small pieces of relevant legislation that impact these businesses.
How would you even know that that existed? I wouldn't know that. Somebody told you, or?
You know, that was one of those pieces of insight that Nick had gathered from talking to people.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Did bringing your product to scale change anything about your product?
Yes. In the kitchen, things were really variable. So like humidity in the air would affect what came out. And so we were always making tweaks on the fly. Like sometimes the equipment would heat up and then we would have to just cook for less time, that sort of thing. At the commercial space, it became basically important to figure out exactly how we could replicate the same product over and over again for product quality reasons, basically. But there were different variables in play. So certain things that we had done manually had to be done automatically to be able to do it, you know, in a cost-effective way. And as I'm trying to call to mind different things that happened, I realized there were actually layers of automation that came over time. Initially, we were basically manually depositing the amount of content necessary for each chip. There was a person that would effectively create each chip. But over time, you know, we realized we had to use depositing equipment to make sure it was the exact right amount of material for each chip. Well, I shouldn't go into too much detail because it is proprietary, but...
Yeah, not too much detail. That's cool. Yeah, so, wow, that's fascinating.
Hey, Streetwalkers. Here's a word from our sponsors. Let's get back into it.
Do you start with a whole egg?
We source just the whites.
Okay. So I don't have to ask you, what do you do with the yolks, bro?
Right. I don't know what the supplier does with the yolks, but I'm sure they have some purpose for them. They wouldn't waste the money.
Sure. Yeah. Have you noticed any changes with this current egg shortage or this egg, whatever we're going through right now?
Yeah. I think our commodity prices, our inputs went up a bit in cost, but it wasn't too severe.
Nothing significant, nothing to write home about.
Right. At the same time, we've actually done a final upgrade of our manufacturing process. So it got a lot cheaper, more automated to make. So I think we did have some increase in the input costs, but that was countered by the change in the process.
So you say final. That means you guys are done tweaking?
I hope so.
For this product? I mean, I'm sure you'll have different lines and different things, but for this initial chips, you're done tweaking?
I hope so. We had some remaining issues on the last process. The biggest one was cost. The next was breakage. So just shipping and handling, then sometimes chips would end up broken because they were thin. And so we fixed that with structural changes to the chip. So yeah, we're pleased with where it's at now.
Okay. So let's just pretend for a second that you're not making chips made out of egg whites. Let's say you're making chocolate chip cookies. Now, a chocolate chip cookie company understandably will have broken cookies. That's just the cost of making cookies. At what point is too many broken cookies? Like, why did you feel the need to adjust the structure because you had too many broken chips?
Yeah, right. So there's two places in the process where this is relevant. One is actually in the factory or the production facility itself, you'll have a certain amount of waste. And that waste will be because of broken products or, you know, overcooked product, whatever it is. And then the second place is actually the end user. So somebody's going to receive a bag of chips in their home and some of them will be broken. So I think there's actually sort of two different sets of considerations that bear on the decision to make a more durable product. We didn't have an excessive amount of waste in the production center. So the chips were intact there. Maybe it's 1 or 2% waste and that's not too severe. Maybe you'd make an alteration if you're a huge company and you're just trying to make every cent of profit you can. But when you're sort of scaling up and, you know, building a brand, it's not essential to cut 1% costs. So that wasn't a problem for us. The real problem is the consumer experience. You know, we didn't want people to be disappointed with what they saw when they opened the bag. And, you know, broken chips are not what people are looking for. So that's really what made the change for us.
How big is each chip, roughly? Are we talking like the size of a poker chip?
Yeah, it is kind of like the size of a poker chip. We actually use squares.
Okay.
If you basically think about the surface area, like you can most efficiently get the most chips in a small amount of space using squares. For two dimensions, it's squares. Yeah, a poker chip's a good size, I think.
Okay.
A good comparison, yeah.
The end user was getting a bunch of broken pieces, and so you guys were like, oh, holy moly, we got to make some changes?
Yeah, it wasn't everybody. It was just maybe shipping to California and things like that. You know, we'd have more breakage.
Okay, so that's a great question. How many states are you guys selling?
Online, we sell everywhere. So Amazon is our most popular channel, and you can order there. And then Cuevas.com also. And then for retail distribution, we've got about 2,000 stores across the country. We're probably mostly in the Midwest, but we're just launching some areas in the South and West Coast also.
Are those a secret right now because they're not finalized?
Let's see. Okay, no, I can say. So we're now live in Sprouts and Albertsons. And it's, I believe it's not all of the Albertson stores. It's just a sort of test of a few different regions. But those were both big channels for us. We've been eyeing those for a long time.
Now, I think recently, and you would know better than I, but Albertsons just bought Kroger, or Kroger just bought Albertsons. I don't know which. Are you going to be in the Kroger eventually as well, if all this testing goes right?
Good question. Typically, different branded stores, even under the same sort of conglomerate of stores, tend to have different buyers for their different categories. So they'll have a different, you know, portfolio of snacks. But when you are working with a single company, your odds of getting into the other stores, assuming you're performing well in the stores that you're in, go up. So I think over time, we'd love to be in all the Krogers.
I am in San Antonio, Texas, and we don't have Kroger. We don't have Albertsons. We don't have Tom Thumb, whatever the hell. We don't have all those other weird things that everybody else has. We have H-E-B. Now, H-E-B is one of the largest grocery chains in the country, as far as I understand. And their very first store, it was in the 1800s, but it's 15, 20 minutes from my house. Are you guys hooked up with HEB at all yet?
Yeah, we are.
What?
Yeah, yeah. Check us out in the, we're either in the snack aisle or the specialty snacks aisle. So if you don't find us with the other chips, like the Lay's, then you'll probably find us next to the nuts and jerky. So maybe check out that aisle.
At my HEB, there's the chip aisle, and then right next to it is the snack aisle, and that's where you find, like you said, jerky or crackers or popcorn, like your neighbor, whatever, Nick Hamburger's neighbor guy. That's where you find those kinds of things. But also, oddly enough, and this makes me laugh every time, Pringles. Pringles is not in the chip aisle because it's not a chip.
Really?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that is funny.
So it's not a chip. It's because it's like, you know, like a chip. Let's just take a Lay's. A Lay's chip is just a thinly sliced potato, right? Well, Pringles is like they make a sort of a meal out of potatoes and whatever, and then they mash it together. So it's a formed chip. Mm. It's a pressed chip instead of an actual sliced potato. It's pressed potato. So it's not a chip. That's why it's in the snack aisle.
Interesting.
That's so weird.
That is weird.
So you're saying maybe not every HEB, I should try different ones. So it's either in the chip aisle or in the snack aisle.
Yeah, that's right. And we store locator on our website. So if you want to know if there's one near you, then you can do that.
That is a genius idea. I love that, my friend. Well done. And that again is at cuevos.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Cuevos.com.
And that means?
It's like huevos. It's eggs in Spanish are huevos.
Is there a lot of Spanish going on in Chicago?
There is, actually. It's a big Spanish. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would not have guessed that.
I think something like half of the population of the city of Chicago speaks Spanish. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure it's like half.
Streetwalkers, I'm giving him a dirty look because that can't possibly be true.
I think it might be true.
Okay, sure. Let's go with that. So you have how many different flavors right now?
At this point, I believe we have 5 flavors live.
Do they come in a bag?
Yep.
Let's say I find a bag of Cuevos at my local HEB in either the snack aisle or the chip aisle. How much is in there?
We've got 2 different sizes. One is a bit over 3 ounces. That's your typical medium-sized bag of chips, and that's 3 servings. So in that bag, you'll get about 15 grams of protein, about 12 grams of fiber, and healthy fats, and very few net carbs.
What are the healthy fats that you use since you take out the yolk? What are the healthy fats that you put in?
Yeah, we've got some coconut oil, and we use a small amount of avocado oil as well.
You said something about net carbs.
Very few.
Net carbs is when you take away the fiber or whatever, and then that's the number?
Yep.
What if I don't take away the fiber? What's the carb? What's the gross carb?
If you don't take away the fiber, then you're looking at about 8 total carbs per serving.
Per serving?
Yeah, we definitely encourage you to take away the fiber. For me as a diabetic, I've been instructed, and this is roughly what I see also in the way my sugar responds to fiber. Treat fiber as having like half the carb content that it does, because sometimes different fibers have some impact on blood sugar, but it's less than a regular carb.
Gotcha. So there's about 3 ounces in each bag, you said, ish, that particular serving bag?
That's right. And then we've got a 1 ounce bag that's in other retail locations.
So 1 ounce bag is 1 serving. So it's right 1 ounce is a serving. Roughly how many chips is that, if you had to guess?
Oh, it's about 20 chips.
Oh, that's a decent amount of chips.
Yeah, it's odd.
And you say that's available in some places. Is that like Vitamin Shoppe?
Yes, actually, we do have the 1 ounce serving in Vitamin Shoppe.
And that would be Vitamin Shoppe with 2 P's and an E.
That's right. Yeah.
Is that nationwide in Vitamin Shoppe?
Yeah, we are. I think they've got 1,100 stores or so, and we're in all of them.
Okay. We're only going to talk about Cuevos for 43 more minutes. Just kidding. You guys, Nick Hamburger and you, Zach Schreier, you guys were invited to participate in Shark Tank. Now, I will tell you that even though this is not an entrepreneur-based podcast, you are not the first Shark Tank participant that I have had on the show.
Oh, wow.
You were in Boston for a while. Are you familiar with the last name Gronkowski?
Yes. Rob?
So there's, I think, 5 brothers, and all 5 of them played professional sports, which blows me away. But
yeah, wow.
One of the brothers, he might even be the youngest. Probably not the youngest. One of the brothers, his name is Chris Gronkowski, and he played football for the Dallas Cowboys. And it doesn't matter who else, because we're in Texas. And he came up with a product that's called an ice shaker. they're all big monsters that work out all the time, nonstop. That's all they do, is they're just animals. So they drink a lot of protein shakes and protein drinks and that kind of thing. And so they didn't like all of the protein shakers that were out there. So he developed his own, Chris did. And then him and all of the other monster animal brothers, they all did the pitch on Shark Tank. And much like when you were on, there was a guest shark. In this particular instance, the guest shark was Alex Rodriguez.
Oh, nice.
And Mark Cuban and Alex Rodriguez bought into Ice Shaker. Alex Rodriguez ended up selling his part after a while to one of the other brothers, Rob Gronkowski. Mark Cuban is still part of the company. Tell me about your Shark Tank experience and who came on board.
Yeah, sure thing. So it was during COVID. And so that made for an interesting setup. We were put up in a hotel room for 8 days, couldn't leave the room. Only the morning of filming were we allowed out of the hotel room, you know, ushered into a big conference room where we paced around nervously for a few hours and then got to go on the show. It was surreal. They take about 10 minutes of footage out of about 45 minutes of filming. And so we were out there for a little while, although it felt very quick. Like it felt like it was just like things were happening really quick and it was over. It was really a pleasant surprise. You know, my biggest worry was that we were going to just totally embarrass ourselves. You know, that's like something that happens to people on that show. I viewed it as a huge opportunity and I was very excited about it, and also a massive liability. So we were quite relieved that the sharks responded well to the products. They liked us. They were generally kind. We didn't have any like really cutthroat moments with them. I guess the result was we got two offers, one from Mr. Wonderful and the other from Daniel Lebetsky from Kindbar. And Daniel's a guest shark as well. And we knew going in that Daniel would be out there, and we were very excited because his experience is exactly what we were trying to do with Quavos. You know, he took a healthy snack and scaled it up to $1 billion or something like that. I actually think they sold to Mars Company for like $5 billion.
Okay, yeah.
He was the perfect guy for us. Mr. Wonderful in character throughout, an offer for a royalty, just classic. And it wasn't actually a bad offer. He was talking about very low equity amounts. So that was, you know, somewhat enticing to us. But, you know, we had our eyes on the prize, which is Daniel. And Daniel negotiated with us a little bit. We had a few moments back and forth. But ultimately, we got a deal that we were both pleased with. And he's been a partner since then.
Now, you said Daniel Lubetsky from Kindbar. I would like to point out that he is not from Kindbar. He is the founder of Kindbar, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I understand that, yes, it's a verbal offer, but then when paperwork and lawyers come into play, some things might change. Did it change too much from verbal to writing?
No, not too much. Both parties had negotiated in good faith. So the deal as it was discussed in the tank was something we were both comfortable with. The only exception to that ended up being the line of credit that we negotiated for. It turned out it was just sort of legally easier to just turn that into cash instead of credit. So we ended up going with $300K for 10% instead of 200 plus a $200K line of credit.
Gotcha. Once again, that's Quavos.com. Spell it for me again.
Quevos.com.
All right. And also it's available on Amazon and they ship everywhere. We're going to move on from that if that's okay with you.
For sure.
Okay. What is a nutraceutical?
Basically, nutraceuticals are things that you can take that have an effect on your physiology. So people might be more familiar with the term supplement. In fact, I know that they're much more familiar with that term. And nutraceuticals and supplements are basically the same thing.
It's just a new word.
It's the way that the nutraceutical industry likes to describe themselves. Because, you know, I think the issue with supplement and its connotation is that you're always just supplementing the diet. So you're taking things that you would otherwise get from food. But in some cases, you can't get from food what you can get from nutraceuticals. So I think that's the reason for the alternative label.
Why did you decide to get into the nutraceutical game?
Actually, this was the same year I was working on Quavos, or started to work on Quavos, so that 2018 to 2019. You know, for the first couple of years of college, I had realized that there were certain things that you could ingest that would make a difference to the way you felt. I think that's a pretty common experience in college to come into that understanding. But, you know, for me, I wanted things that I could take that were going to add to my health rather than take it away. So I wanted to feel good in ways that were actually good for me. So I started looking into this whole space of supplements and pretty quickly started playing around, experimenting, realizing that there were combinations that really worked quite well for me. As I said, I was adamant about things that were actually going to add health rather than take it away. So I did a ton of research over that year, really looking at every single product in the market, looking at all the clinical studies on these different ingredients that I was interested in, and basically decided to put together some products that combine different nutraceuticals to create reliable, repeatable, stable, balanced, clean, energizing effects. So that's sort of the inspiration. The core of that business, which is LifeStacks, has stayed the same. We're just trying to make people feel great in ways that are healthy for them.
How do you spell LifeStacks?
It's Life, L-I-F-E, Stacks, S-T-A-C-K-S, and we're at LifeStacks.com.
And why do you call it that?
Stacks in the supplement space are combinations. The most common stack is caffeine and theanine. Theanine is a calming amino acid that pairs really nice with caffeine. So people stack those together and then have a smooth, energized day. That was part of what went into choosing that name. Also, there's this notion of habit stacking, the idea of basically taking something you're already doing and combining it with something that you'd like to do, a convenient way to adopt a new behavior. And then, you know, you can also think of your daily stack as in the combination of things that you're doing on a daily basis to support your health and functionality. We intended to communicate all of that with LifeStacks. You know, fits into your life and your lifestyle. And ideally is going to add health and vitality.
And why was this important to you to start a business that focuses on health?
As a type 1 diabetic, I, for better or worse, I'm just conscious of the difference in outcomes the type 1s have. And so it's very important for me to just do what I can to support my body's functioning over the long term. So that's really what drove me to supplements in part. The other piece was actually, there are things that I ingested my first 2 years of college that made a difference in my short-term functioning, but I did not want to basically sacrifice long-term health for short-term functioning. And so that's what really prompted me to look at supplements.
Does LifeStacks specifically cater to people who are concerned about diabetes, or is it for everybody?
Yeah, we cater to everybody. Fortunately, many of the same things that make sense as interventions for type 1s make sense for the population in general. Our physiology is very generic. You know, humans are running the same sort of software and hardware pretty much across the board. And many of the causes of premature aging are the same. Our view is that nutrients that contribute to metabolic health in certain ways, nutrients that fortify your nutrient status, meaning things that you need that it's better to have more of, and then nutrients that set state, meaning things that support focus and energy, those work pretty much the same in everybody. So, you know, everybody's got the same list of essential nutrients that they need. That list of vitamins and minerals is, you know, applies to the whole population. Type 1s just should be even more attentive to those things, but they're not different things.
You're saying that if everybody ate like they had type 1 diabetes, we'd all live longer?
I think that it's possible. Type 1s don't necessarily eat, you know, as well as they possibly could for their own sakes. But yeah, many of the same things that would make a difference for type 1 would make a difference for everybody.
Why is fasting important? And how does that comport with LifeStacks and or Quavos?
You know, I mentioned that third meaning of stacks, which is sort of your daily habit stack or the combinations of things that you do to support your health. Myself and my co-founder at LifeStacks, we both enjoy fasting as a lifestyle. So we're usually talking about the intermittent kind where we're just not eating for a certain period of the day. Usually it's not eating until a certain time of day and then making sure to stop eating a certain amount of time before bed. And so that gives a sort of eating window. In my case, I typically eat starting at like 2 p.m. in the afternoon and I stop eating by like 8 p.m. roughly. And so that's a part of my habit stack. And so at LifeStacks, when we developed our current product, which is an MCT that you add to coffee that delivers just all day clean, sustained energy, we made sure to make that fasting friendly. That was a priority for us because we wanted something that worked within our daily schedule. Now, in terms of fasting as sort of a general intervention for regular folks, I think the biggest problem with our consumption is that we're actually inundated with things that we'd love to eat. They're not that nourishing and not that filling. And so we tend to overeat and eat too often. Basically, I think the antidote to that in the modern world is rather than just say, oh, I'm never going to have sugar again, or I'm never going to, you know, X, Y, and Z, find a way to restrict without feeling like you're restricting. You know, the more you feel like you're resisting the things that you want to do, the harder that's going to be, the more stress you're going to be under, the more likely you are to cave. Fasting for many people is a way to successfully restrict or just not overeat without really feeling you have to make much of a sacrifice. As soon as you get started, it's really no problem not to eat until a certain time of day. It's not difficult. And especially with assistance from things like caffeine and things like our products, it's really a breeze.
A couple of questions. Well, one, you kind of equated it to not giving up everything forever, just kind of dipping your baby toe in or managing or whatever. A friend of mine said he's a physical trainer. Everybody asks him all the time, what is the best exercise that I should be doing? And his answer always surprises them. And the answer is whatever you will actually do. If you hate running, yep, then don't make running your thing because you won't do it. Focus on the things that you will do in your behaviors. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about as far as diet. You keep saying my business partner. Who is your business partner with LifeStacks?
I met Vincent Gudanis, my business partner on LifeStacks, in college, actually. We met like the very first week of our freshman year at Williams. That year that I was working on Quavos, he was actually at Oxford for a year abroad. And so we started to just communicate about all things supplements and got pretty interested in creating a product together.
How is your MCT? Is it an oil?
It's a powder.
Oh, it's a powder. Okay, so then that's how it's different. I was going to ask, how is your MCT oil different than everybody else's, but it's a powder.
That's one of the things that's different about it. There's actually two others. One is it's way more delicious than any other MCT on the market. I made sure of that. Also, we use a stack of nutraceuticals that's designed for basically all day energy. We've got these neurotransmitter systems in the brain that are basically doing the messaging. So everybody's heard of dopamine, and dopamine is a neurotransmitter or a neuromodulator. It's got to do with basically getting oriented towards tasks. And I've heard it put this way. Dopamine is for things that take a little bit of work, where you visualize that thing. You're effectively the machine that's producing that outcome. And so dopamine is about orienting towards those things, then actually getting yourself to do those things. And then there's other neurotransmitter systems like the serotonin system, which is more about stabilizing your mood and your circadian rhythm, for example. And there's systems like the GABAergic system and the glycinergic system. Oh, and of course, cholinergic activity, which is often called like the learning system. And as it happens, different things in the diet and different nutraceuticals can nudge these systems to perform more optimally. And so, you know, everybody's heard of taking Adderall, which is a big dopaminergic, for example, or taking psychedelics, which activate a certain serotonin receptor. But it turns out even just things that you eat, like the protein you get from food, can make a difference to these different neurotransmitter systems, because the neurotransmitters themselves are made of food parts. And so what we're doing with the stack of ingredients that we're using in the MCT is we're nudging these systems, supporting them with nutrients so they function a little better. The net effect is that you feel a little more focused, you feel more drive, it's easier to do the stuff that you intended to do, you've got more sustained energy. And then also, as I mentioned, you pair this with coffee, and the taurine that we use in the product basically smooths the action of the caffeine. So instead of this like jolt and then crash, you get this smooth, sustained energy from that caffeine.
It comes in a powder. How well does it mix? Do I got to buy one of those little like a whisk, or do I got to use a frother? How do I mix this into my coffee?
We recommend frothing because the solubility is really great that way. So you just, you know, single zoom and it's all dissolved. But many of our customers also just use a spoon, and that works fine. But with MCT, there's certain properties about the way it interacts with liquids that make it so that the frother or even a blender or Vitamix are generally best.
Okay. What if I have cream in my coffee? Does that neutralize your MCT effect?
It won't neutralize the effects, but we created the MCT to be an alternative to your regular coffee creamer. You know, your cream probably has a good amount of net carbs, might have some sugar in it. You know, it's certainly got all that milk fat. And the MCT actually does not have any of those things. It's low carb, it's a healthy fat, it's vegan, it's keto, and it's delicious also. So I think you could probably just toss your creamer and use our MCT instead.
Okay, so this is one of your products. What other kind of products do you guys have right now?
That's the one that we've got on the market right now.
Okay.
It comes in three flavors, vanilla, chocolate, and hazelnut. But I will do a little teaser in case people are interested. We are going to be launching an electrolyte product pretty soon as well. The MCT is really geared towards like a work stack. You know, we want you to feel good while you're working. Just like get your stuff done, be in the right headspace, not be too stressed, but have the motivation that you need and the focus that you need to get your stuff done and do it well. But we also want to support the exercise occasion. So, you know, electrolytes, when you're fasting or when you're, you know, in a low carb state, electrolytes are very helpful for supporting exercise. And then there's also other ingredients that we've personally loved taking for years that support the benefits and also exercise capacity. So let's see. I'll name one ingredient or two just to give people a sense.
Adderall.
Adderall, exactly. No, for sure not.
No.
In fact, Adderall, I'd strongly recommend against using for exercise because it has, you know, implications for the cardiovascular system. Alternatively, you can use something like cordyceps mushroom, which actually may boost aerobic capacity and lung health over time. So you'll find that in a lot of like lung health blends, and that's something we'll include in the electrolyte blend. And then I'll name another. Our magnesium is coming from magnesium malate, and that's actually been studied to reduce soreness that comes with exercise. So you can recover a little better and faster using our electrolyte powder.
Got you. Last question. I know that when you guys were really starting to do some guerrilla marketing with Quavos, and I assume with Lifestacks, you began with like social media and other influencers. My question is, why didn't you call me, bro?
Oh, damn. That's a hard last question. yeah, sorry about that.
No worries. Well, Zach, as we're heading out, first, I want you to hit those two websites again, tell everybody where they can find your stuff, and then tell everybody where they can follow your shits on social media.
Yeah, sure thing. Quavos.com, Quevos.com, and Lifestacks.com. That's life, STACKS.com. Those are the websites for the two products that we've discussed. And actually, over at Lifestacks.com, we're doing a try before you buy it offer. So basically, the idea is we know you're going to love this stuff, but it's probably new to you. You know, you've probably have not added MCT to your coffee before. You're probably wondering how it tastes, how it feels. We're sure that once you get your hands on it, you'll love it and keep it. So that's the offer we're doing. Basically, if you don't love it, no questions asked, you just get your money back. Or rather, you don't even pay in the first place. So that's the offer. And actually, you'll find that offer if you just head over to lifestacks.com and then click on the shop button. And then in terms of social, we are Eat Quavos and we are Lifestacks underscore performance, if I'm not mistaken, on Instagram. Personally, I don't do any social media. It's just not part of my productive day, I've realized. So I'm off that stuff. But you can follow the companies on Instagram.
Well, it sounds like you're too busy to mess with social media when you're managing these two global empires.
Yeah, global. That might be a bit of an overstatement, but I hope we're there soon.
It's maybe an overstatement now, but it won't be soon. Zach Schreier, thank you for taking the time out of your busy day and your hectic entrepreneurial schedule to hang out and let's get to know you a little bit better on Fascination Street, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. And you have a great rest of your week, man.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
Opening music is the song Magnolia from the 2001 album Intransigence, used with permission from Douglas Miles Clark. Closing music is from the song Say My Name off the 2021 album Underdog Anthems, used with permission from Jax Hollow. If you like the show, tell a friend, subscribe, and rate and review the show on iTunes and wherever else you download podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel. All the episodes are available there as well. Check me out on Vero at Fascination Street Pod and TikTok at Fascination Street Pod. And again, thanks for listening.